You're listening to the Triangle Radio Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Hollywood 2018 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part B. Here are some of the contributors to this month's issue. Beth Zaniak, for 25 years, Vanity Fair Executive Director of Communications Beth Zaniak has been navigating the media landscape with aplomb. As Graydon Carter says, Beth has all the attributes of a great communications chief: honesty, forthrightness, a heightened bullshit detector, and a brilliant sense of what's news. That said, she wasn't above pleading when necessary. Frankly, those are pretty much the same qualities you look for in an editor. And had she ever decided to become one, I would have moved her over in a heartbeat. James Walcott. In Revival of the Fittest, contributing editor James Walcott chronicles the fall and surprising recent resurgence of New York City's revival houses. Now, these theaters face new hazards, as when a program is curated by someone accused of sexual misconduct. That's the new world we're in, says Walcott, who also profiles Hollywood's current luminaries in the 2018 Hollywood portfolio. Chris Dixon, after more than 7 years at New York, creative director Chris Dixon joined Vanity Fair in 2011, spearheading a full-service design vision for the expansive Vanity Fair universe. Beyond reimagining the magazine's typography, illustration, and design, he and his team have created the branding and visuals for Vanity Fair's newest initiatives, The Hive, the New Establishment Summit, and Founders Fair. He notes that the greatest joys he's found in the magazine would have come from collaborating with diverse talent, and says, "I'm excited to continue our redesign and evolution with our sights set on the future." Art Streiber, for a boom of their own, photographer Art Streiber shot a group of the pioneering women who, in 2000, had gathered at Santa Barbara's Miramar Hotel to organize opposition to gender inequity in Hollywood. "What was so amazing about these women is that they were ahead of their time," Streiber says. "They were so appreciative to be reassembled and recognized for saying then what is being said so loudly and forcefully 18 years later." Tom Brokaw. Before he vaulted to stardom, Tom Brokaw, who co-hosted the Today Show and anchored NBC Nightly News and Meet the Press, delivered the 11 o'clock news on KNBC in Burbank, California. In To Live and Dine in L.A., he recounts how this job landed him at 26 in circles that included Henry Fonda, Lauren Bacall, Cary Grant, and other renowned actors. The older Hollywood stars seemed to feel an obligation to always appear larger than life, Brokaw says, but the best of them never forgot who made them what they became. Sarah Marks, for 26 years as Vanity Fair Director of Special Projects, Sarah Marks has produced and realized the back-breaking but seemingly effortless magic of Vanity Fair's parties, including landmark annual soirees for the Academy Awards, the Cannes Film Festival, and the Tribeca Film Festival, events that bring together in intimate and beautifully crafted settings the rich, powerful, and illustrious names that the magazine is famous for covering year after year. Alongside her trusted global dream team, Marks is the field marshal you want both behind and on the scene. "You create this incredible event," Graydon Carter noted to her after the 2016 Oscar party. And then you change, and when I arrive, you look like the heroine from an English drawing room drama. Quite incredible, and I cannot be more grateful. Catherine MacLeod, it was fun to capture the candid moments, says Annie Leibovitz's longtime producer at Vanity Fair, senior photography producer Catherine MacLeod, who accepted an additional responsibility on the set of this year's Hollywood cover shoot. Behind-the-scenes photographer, she and Matthias Gagel, Leibovitz's camera assistant, worked as a team, says MacLeod, to document the camaraderie and energy that make being on Annie's set so special. Jonathan Becker, for The Wizard of Cap Ferrat, contributing photographer Jonathan Becker shot 86-year-old Pierre Grunberg, who for nearly 70 years has worked as a swim instructor to VIPs, including Tina Turner and Robin Williams, at the Grand Hotel du Cap Ferrat on the French Riviera. We connected as swimmers, Becker says. Long ago, I made a list of the things I felt I did well in life. Swimming was first, then came boxing, then sailing, and then maybe photography. Todd S. Purdom, in an adaptation from his new book, Something Wonderful, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Broadway Revolution, out in April, contributing editor Todd S. Purdom revisits the iconic songwriting duo as they created the Broadway musical South Pacific, winner of the 1950 Pulitzer Prize. It was always a special thrill to find some document in the Library of Congress that I'd never seen quoted anywhere else, or a draft fragment of a lyric that showed how Hammerstein worked, Purdom says. It's also been great to have something to tackle besides my usual day job covering politics. behind the scenes. Everyone clicked. Oprah, Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, not to mention Wonder Woman and the Queen. Some of Hollywood's most powerful women set the tone for Annie Leibovitz's ambitious cover shoot. Josh Duboff reports, with photographs by Catherine McLeod. Opening photos, light and magic. Michael Shannon, Annie Leibovitz, and Jessica Chastain on set. And Oprah Winfrey. The Queen, Wonder Woman, Oprah. This year's Hollywood cover features some of film and television's most iconic and beloved women. And the roster of men, Han Solo anyone, isn't too shabby either. Unsurprisingly, managing to assemble the group of 13 cover stars for the ultra-glam, white tie and shimmery gown shoot was no simple feat. Photographed in Los Angeles and New York by Annie Leibovitz, this year's cover marks the last one in the 25-year tenure of Vanity Fair editor Graydon Carter. And yes, Carter, nestled between Wonder Woman herself, Gal Gadot, and New York institution Robert De Niro, appears on the cover for the first time ever. We wanted to celebrate all things Graydon on this cover, Vanity Fair creative director, fashion and style, Jessica Diehl explained. Said Annie Leibovitz, in honor of Graydon, we went to the full white tie, which is his style. Next photos, all set. Reese Witherspoon, hair stylist Lona Vigi, and makeup artist Molly R. Stern, and Michael B. Jordan and Zendaya. Part of the fun of soaking up a Vanity Fair Hollywood cover is imagining what went on during the photo session. Who whispered to whom? Who made whom laugh? Who exchanged phone numbers and followed each other on Instagram the next day? This year, our Hollywood portfolio is composed of photos from behind the scenes of the shoot. It's an insider look into the magic of what goes on at this special cover shoot, said Jane Sarkin, Vanity Fair features editor. It's always been a very closed set. We get to see Tom Hanks crack up Oprah and Reese Witherspoon, perhaps pitching himself for an arc on the second season of Big Little Lies. We get to see Nicole Kidman have her luminous hair touched up. We always assumed cartoon bluebirds dressed and prepped Kidman, but apparently humans do it. We get to see the charming De Niro having his collar adjusted, the ethereal Jessica Chastain awaiting the lens, and the serene Michael Shannon surveying the scene. The selection of stars from a variety of age brackets also sets this year's installment apart. This is what is great about Hollywood, Vanity Fair executive West Coast editor Krista Smith said, where you can have Michael B. Jordan, who's 30, or Gal Gadot, who's 32, or Harrison Ford, who is 75. All of them are totally relevant. Zendaya, 21, expressed the excitement she felt. Surrounded by so many legends on set, I'm like this little kid. Hey, I'm coming up. You know, it's pretty cool. I just want to keep working and live up to the people I'm surrounded by. Witherspoon, who has appeared on several Vanity Fair Hollywood covers, reflected on what this means to an actor. Being on the cover of Vanity Fair was just sort of this incredible moment that validated all that work. You really feel it can give you the momentum that you need to push forward and to do great things. As one gazes at the photos of these actors and actresses on set, waiting in anticipation of their moment in front of the lens, it feels like you're right there with them. It's the Hollywood issue, and it happens once a year, and it's magic. Thank you. Vanity Fair gets letters. Edie and Andy and Bob. Looking for Warhol's muse in Dylan's lyrics. Disenchantment with Jan Winner's Rolling Stone and Jeremy Irons' Majestic Homestead. Debbie Beinlich from Wheeling, Illinois writes, I loved the Edie Sedgwick pictures in the holiday issue, Edie in Andyland by Lily Annalick. I did not think there was a photograph of her that I had not seen, but you provided one, the picture of Edie and Andy at the dinner party. Thank you for that. I just wanted to comment on the rumor that Dylan's Just Like a Woman is based on Edie. It probably is not. Dylan reportedly wrote that song with a former or current lover in mind. Edie lives, instead, in the verses of the classic Like a Rolling Stone. In it, Dylan speaks of her school days. You only used to get juiced in it. Many people think the chrome horse with your diplomat refers to Andy Warhol. Apparently, she spent her $80,000 inheritance in 6 months with the factory group. That would mean, Dylan wrote, you're going to have to get used to it after Warhol took from you everything he could steal. Behind the curtain, from Las Cruces, New Mexico, Stephen Kahn writes, as Jan Winner's involvement with Rolling Stone winds down, the excerpt from Joe Hagen's biography makes for a rather sad epitaph for a man whose magazine was so emblematic of the counterculture from its San Francisco heyday on down. Between the covers, November. It suggests that Winner had been helplessly drawn into the toxic narcissism of a single rock star in much the same way that that star was devoted to his wife. I'll miss Winner's Rolling Stone for its command of the entire tapestry of the 60s and 70s, as well as for its keen political reporting, not just for the commemorations of a man who acted one moment as if he had personally invented peace, then jealously spat bile on his contemporaries the next. Carol M. Johnson writes from Charlotte, North Carolina, it makes me sad that the musical group that changed my life was such an effing humiliation for John Lennon. Pulling back the veil is always a risky business. This time it seemed just a particularly harsh glimpse of reality. Fit for a King, from San Mateo, California, David H. Karp writes, what a wonderful piece on Jeremy Irons' Kilco Castle, Kingdom by the Sea by David Camp, October. As a mostly retired architect, I found it a pleasure to see the love and good judgment that obviously accompanied the task of rescuing the neglected structure. There is not the least bit too much in terms of all the furniture, carpets, and objects in this abode. There were excellent interior and exterior architectural decisions. Certainly, Venus Dutchberry should share credit for her contribution to such an extraordinary project following the sad death of her father. I found it wonderful to see the product of taste, decisiveness, and effort. I should confess that I was a long-time subscriber to Vanity Fair who let my order lapse. This has been a clarion call to once more subscribe. Correction, on page 144 of the December issue, Performance Artist by Mark Rotso, the person who preceded Andre Bishop as artistic director of Lincoln Center Theater was misidentified. It was Gregory Mosher. Letters to the editor should be sent electronically with the writer's name, address, and daytime phone number to letters@vf.com. All requests for back issues should be sent to subscriptions@vf.com. All other queries should be sent to vfmail@vf.com. The magazine reserves the right to edit submissions, which may be published or otherwise used in any medium. All submissions become the property of Vanity Fair. More from the VF mailbag. I wish you well, but farewell, writes Rose Steele from San Jose, canceling her subscription. I'm keeping the tote bag. Her valedictory note comes at a momentous time for this is not only her last issue, apparently, but also Graydon Carter's, about which a number of readers felt moved to comment. The letter from Kathy Langdon of Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, summed up the feelings of many. "Thanks, Graydon, for a great magazine." Or maybe Alice Cutler in London said it best, "Thank you for many years of a thoroughly enjoyable read." Or possibly it was Kevin Ross of Cincinnati who struck the most representative tone. "I was saddened to read of Graydon Carter's retirement from Vanity Fair. He is carrying the torch of a free press for many of us. I can only hope we will still hear from him. I feel I am not alone." Perhaps less typical was the note from Jojo, who writes, "As the Dalai Lama said, we must learn to work not just for our own individual self, family, or nation, but for the benefit of all mankind. Perhaps Mr. Carter could encourage the Dalai Lama to set up a daily briefing with Mr. Trump." Yes, we totally see that happening. We do. Pat Wynn Brown of Columbus, Ohio, also has Washington on her mind. Graydon Carter's apt and on-point editorials regarding the presidency of Donald J. Trump should be entered into the congressional record. Breaking Graydon's departure was, in fact, read into the congressional record by Representative Steve Cohen. There's video. Finally, Elizabeth Ellen from Ann Arbor, Michigan, gets to the heart of it. "I began reading Vanity Fair on my grandmother's couch, immersed in the glamorous world in which it is itself immersed. But like the climate, like the earth, from the beginning of time, everything must change. And so too, my dear Vanity Fair, must change. We'll always have yesterday on my grandmother's couch." From Krista Smith comes this Vanity Fair profile, with photograph by Naga Sakai. Yara Shahidi, age 17, provenance Minneapolis, Minnesota. Playing pretend, I lived a very atypical childhood with two creative parents. My mother is a commercial actress, and my father is a cinematographer. When she was 4, her family relocated to Los Angeles, where Shahidi began acting. Primetime, in 2014, she landed the role of Zoe Johnson on Kenya Barris's ABC sitcom Blackish. Her character's college set spinoff, Grownish, debuted last month on Freeform. I heard that it had been picked up while I was at prom. It was surreal. I'm so excited to tell these new stories. It's my turn to talk to the camera. Crimson Peak. This fall, Shahidi will enroll at Harvard, juggling her time between real life and sitcom campuses. I have the great fortune of working with fabulous people who want me to go to college as much as I do. I was here. Her activism has led to a college recommendation letter from Michelle Obama, interviewing Hillary Clinton, modeling for Beyoncé's Ivy Park, and meeting Angela Davis. My grandfather was a Black Panther, and there's a picture of them together, so hearing her speak was just incredible. Miss Independent, Shahidi's philanthropy includes Yara's Club, a mentorship program, and 18 by 18, an effort to increase voter turnout. It's amazing to have this platform to help make a difference.
Thank you.
Now, from the Vanities, here's Ava DuVernay with My Stuff. Recently named Entertainer of the Year at the NAACP Image Awards, American filmmaker Ava DuVernay is pioneering in her field with hugely successful movies such as 13th and Selma, earning multiple nominations. The founder of Array, an enterprise dedicated to the promotion of women and people of color in film, she is a force to be reckoned with. Herewith, the director, whose upcoming movie with Disney, A Wrinkle in Time, will be released next month, shares her favorite things. Morning routine, meditate, hike, breakfast, seize the day. Tech, favorite app, Waze, last person you texted, Oprah Winfrey, person you text the most, my assistants, Selah and Michael, favorite podcast, Arrays, The Call-In. Favorite social media platform, a tie between Twitter and Instagram. Favorite person to follow on Instagram, Hilton Owls. Last Google search, impeachment protocol. Favorite news source, Democracy Now. App you use the most, Postmates. App you're most embarrassed to have on your phone, Tetris. Words to live by, be not afraid. Word you love or hate, hate the word moist. What career would you choose for your next life? Filmmaker. Place you want to travel to next? Shanghai. What would be your superpower? Telekinesis. Beauty. Your pass down from mom beauty routine. Take off your makeup every night without fail. Your can't live without product? Black eyeliner. Go-to beauty brand? Everything NARS. Must have face treatment? Facials and skincare products by Jennifer Brodeur. Beauty secret, my friend Damone Roberts, also known as the eyebrow guru, taught me to always make sure my brows are done because they are the frame of your face. He's right, and I always do. Best beauty tip, my makeup artist Uzo taught me that you can go from 0 to 100 real quick when busy with a simple red lip. She's right, and it's true. Favorite place to get a spa treatment? Chuan Spa at the Langan Hotel in Pasadena, California. Favorite line in a movie? Be a warrior, can you? Oprah Winfrey as Mrs. Witch in A Wrinkle in Time. Home, favorite coffee shop, Rubies Plus Diamonds on Sunset Boulevard in L.A. Do you wear shoes inside your home? Absolutely not. Favorite candle? Diptyque Bays. Favorite season? Summer. Best way to decompress at home? Candle, music. Last thing you cooked? Falafel and hummus salad. On your reading list? Robin Cost Lewis, Claudia Rankine, Ta-Nehisi Coates. Best host gift to give, receive? Candles. Can't leave the house without? iPhone. and from the Vanity's Hot News by Style Obsess. And the photo, Fabrizio Vitti's apartment in Paris. Fabrizio Vitti's creations were designed to be worn by the darlings of the big screen, photographs of whom adorn the walls of his Parisian home. "I spent my childhood years watching movies," he recalls. "I always had this fantasy that I lived in Hollywood and was friends with Marilyn." The Italian shoe designer and longtime shoe style director of Louis Vuitton, whose designs are beloved by the likes of star director Sofia Coppola, unveils the spring collection from his eponymous brand this month. A voguish range of feminine satin and pearlescent metallic, Vitti's new styles are exuberant and fabulous, razzle-dazzle. starry-eyed. Eyewear Magnets and father-son duo Larry and Garrett Late have combined their venerable expertise as the founders of Oliver Peoples and Garrett Late California Optical, respectively, to launch new luxury eyewear brand Mr. Late, inspired by Hollywood Hills and Beverly Hills. The legacy continues. Surf's Up. The owners of Malibu's beautiful one-gun ranch, Alice Bamford and Ann Eisenring, have collaborated with Anglo-American brand Tipster to produce a collection of Snoopy and surf-inspired clothing. The playful designs will be available this month at the farm's Ranch at the Pier store. Comic strip cool. Thank you. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service and broadcasting from its Raleigh, North Carolina studios. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.